5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new panic room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on.
All-new Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, good evening. It's it's Thursday night, 1st of June, and 9:30 Central Time. What that is, Eastern Pacific, whatever. Mountain Time. They have Mountain Time here, which is interesting. It sounds like a kid's show, doesn't it? Like I said, Mountain Time. with I was going to say with Bill Cosby, but no, perhaps not. Let's go with Elmo. No, can't do Elmo either. Is there anybody, any character we can do now? It's all very scary. Okay, so yes, here we are once again. The last week seems to have flown. I think my dogs are trying to kill each other in the background, which is kind of cool. Maybe we should film that and get that on YouTube. Somebody will pay to watch that, I think. But so special show tonight. Big fat name check too for the music for this evening is big fan of the show, big friend of the show, Carlos Colon and the Jersey Shore Roustabouts, our in-house band. absolutely fantastic. Just my kind of music. Obviously, anybody familiar with the show will know that. Great, great stuff. That was Miss You Tonight by Carlos. So if you're listening, Carlos, thank you for allowing us to... listen to the music and for us to play it without suing us. So God bless him, that's what I say. Anywho, it would not be a show. I was going to do Fruit Fly Corner now, but we need Xtina because I know it's a favourite part of the show, so hopefully she's with us. Xtina, how are you, my dear?
I am doing wonderfully today.
Okay.
I am
on a scale of 1 to 10, how sober are we this evening?
On a scale of what to what again?
What? Exactly. There you go. You have answered the question. That is fantastic. I love that. I love you. I love you. Said Xtina. So hey, So how are you well this evening? How has your week been?
It's been okay. It's been pretty good. It's, you know, summer and it's getting warm. You know, I was going to say, you were mentioning mountains, and the other day we had some storms here, and my cable wasn't coming in good, and when I was trying to get the cable on, the TV, it came across the TV and it said, moving mountains. I thought that was really strange. I was like,
fantastic.
And I wasn't drunk. I promise.
Well,
I was not drunk.
Okay. Okay, so hey, we've got a fabulous show this evening. Obviously, we have you. So you know, as you're saying, there's a great saying in England, which may not translate, but there's no show without punch. And obviously, without you, there would be no show. It'd just be me, really, and nobody wants to listen to me for an hour and a half. I can assure you.
I don't know. I could listen to you for the whole show.
You say again?
I think I could listen to you for the whole show. I could.
Yeah, I'll go. No, don't be a bad idea. We have our very special guest, Richard Chismar, who is the co-author of Wendy's Button Box with Stephen King, and a bunch of other good stuff. He is founder of Cemetery Dance Publications and Cemetery Dance Magazine, and the man's done everything, and I'm in awe. He's just, you know, he's who I want to be when I grow up. So, and we have Becky the reviewer on after half time, who's going to be reviewing something. I don't know. There we go. That's a little catchphrase there. So, oh no. But I think first of all, I think we need to head over to James Longmore's Fruit Fly Corner for this week's fascinating fruit fly fact. So here we go. Did you know that fruit flies are found on every continent except Antarctica? Maybe because it's too cold for them. I don't know. But, so that was enough for that. We will have. We need to move our entire kitchen to Antarctica because we're plagued with the damn thing. I can't get... You spray them and they just look at you like, is that all you've got? You know, is that it? As I said before, we got somebody recommended sort of, it's like an organic stuff. I think it's lavender based or something. So you spray these and it's, you know, harmless to other things. And I sprayed them and all it does is make them smell nice. So we've got all these lavender scented fruit flies buzzing around the kitchen and I just know... Just stop it.
You just stop buying fruit. I think that's the answer. No more fruit.
It's the guinea pig. We have a bizarre house, as you know, we have a guinea pig. And obviously, it's not just fruit. I mean, they eat carrots and whatnot, so they like that. But anywhere sort of warm and damp, because obviously he wheezes. Little guinea pig wheeze, and he gets a bit damp every now and then. But it's just around, and then because they spread around the house. And but hey, they are fascinating creatures. So more fruit fly facts next week. Obviously, we will have Xtina Marie's baseball corner later, which is probably hopefully while I'm having my wee, so I can miss that. So hopefully we have Richard on the line again. AT&T willing. You never know, really. It's hit and miss. It's like, you know, it's terrible. I DVR stuff a lot, because I like to watch things when I want to watch them. You know, we couldn't do that when I was a kid. You know, you watched the show when it was on.
But now I
just love the DVR, and I'll DVR stuff and then binge watch it. I'm a terror for that. And you get all settled down, and settled down, you got your beer or your mug of tea and your cookies or whatever, and then you get that, you know, this is not available at this time. For fuck's sake, really? Thank you, AT&T. So if AT&T are listening, I hate you. I really hate you. And the problem is, I've looked at alternatives, and they are... I mean, we tried, I think, Comcast were just as bad. So AT&T,
the cheaper
for the same crappy service. So I'm paying less for the same crappy service. So I guess that appeals to the Yorkshireman. I'm paying $10 a month less for the same rubbish service. So, but if we didn't have Simpsons and SpongeBob and that, the house would be... there, I think. Keeps me and the kids happy. So, anywho, without further ado, hopefully we have Richard on the line. Are you there, sir?
I'm here. How are you guys doing?
Hey!
Yay!
We're very good. Great to hear you. I always have that moment between introing a guest and now those couple of seconds when, you know, maybe AT&T have been listening and they've pulled the plug somewhere. So it's great. Thank you for coming on the show, sir. It's great to finally get to chat to you. How have you been?
I've been well. I've been well. Thanks for having me.
Things
have been interesting.
I can imagine. I mean, you know, I guess obviously, you know, we'll get the obvious questions out of the way to start with. I mean, I have to say, obviously, I've read Gwendy's Button Box. I also read Long December,
right.
Your short story collection, which I really, really enjoyed. I read a lot for this job and for work. And more often than not, you know, I find myself skimming through things, you know, just so I can say, but I just couldn't put it down. You know, either of them. I actually read Gwendy's Button Box one morning. The kids were still running around mithering me to do things. They just shut up. You know,
don't
play your iPad. Go on, off you go. So how has it been? I mean, you've been thrust into the limelight with Gwendy's Button Box,
I've been telling people after 30 years I'm kind of a rookie again in the writing world, just because compared to Steve, obviously no one's heard of me. So it's been interesting. It's just been an interesting dynamic to experience, and a lot of fun from start to finish. The whole thing's been a blast.
Fantastic. So I have to say, I mean, my favorite, you're looking on your author page, is I like Gwendy's Wunschkasten. I love that, the German edition. I love the German. I studied German many, many years ago at high school, for a year, and I failed it and didn't do it anymore. But I love some of the words are just fantastic. I thought Wunschkasten, I love that. I guess that's Button Box in German, is it?
You know what? I don't even know. I know we've sold to a number of countries, and I know a couple of them don't even have technically a word for Button Box. So they're having to retitle it, which is kind of cool. But I'm trying to see if I have a list around here somewhere. But I know we've sold to England, Germany, the Ukraine. Spanish rights have gone, and a bunch of others. So it'll be interesting to see all the covers when they come in.
Yeah. Are you one of these authors like me who sort of collects every one of your own stuff? You have a whole shelf full of them.
You know what? I try to, and they're all in boxes right now, but I really want to put them up on a shelf again. But, yeah, I think there's a few foreign editions of anthologies that I'm missing, but one day I'll go back and track them down. But on this book, yeah, I'll make sure I get a copy of everything.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, I just finished reading oh, sorry,
it last
sorry,
night.
Xtina's talking again. Everybody be quiet.
I know. No, I finished reading it last night, and I loved it. I did. I will have to say that in the last few months, probably maybe even the last year or so, it's been really hard to hold my attention when it comes to reading. But I read the whole thing, and woohoo! I'll be leaving my review today. It was really good.
Awesome, thank you. Yeah, it's a quick read.
Yeah, that's a thought.
We've been hammered a few times from people saying, "Oh, it's too short," and I just, you know, we advertise it as a novella, and that's what it is. It's almost 25,000 words, so. You know, and that's how it was designed. I mean, when Steve started writing it, it was going to be a short story, and then I kind of threw up all over the page and added a lot of words, and he added some more, and then we collaborated together on you know, mixing things together, particularly toward the ending, and that's the word count we ended with. I mean, I think we could have, we did it in a month, exactly, month, and
wow.
So we could have certainly you know, went longer, and who knows, maybe one day we will, but that's what it was. That's the story that it was intended to be. So, I feel bad when some folks complain that it's too short, but then I just look back at the marketing materials, and it says it's a novella, so hey, it's not our fault.
No, it's, you know, and I have to say that, you know, I've read, you know, Under the Dome, which is, you know, really, really sick and killed my wrist when I was reading it. But
yeah.
I think that for myself, one of my favorite King books was always the Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, and that wasn't very long, you know.
No.
That's probably one of my favorites. So, you know, if that's it, and you know what, the way, and I'm no spoilers, I definitely will not give away any spoilers, but the way that it was left off, I think that there could even be a, you know, a sequel or something, you know.
Oh yeah.
Well,
yeah, for sure.
I was thinking that, yeah.
We've had a lot of calls for, again, not to give anything away, but to continue with several particular characters. So, it'll be interesting. I don't know if that'll ever happen or not, but I'm certainly up for it.
No, I think, I mean, obviously, you know, it's a sign of a good book when you get to the end and you're disappointed that you've got to the end. And I wanted more, you know. I thought, I knew it was a novella. I, you know, had the book in my hand and I could see that it was getting to the end. which is, you know, good. I think when you get to the end of the book and think, thank God I've finished that. And I've read many books like that, and I'm not going to mention E.L. James again. I mention her every week pretty much, but we'll leave that one there, shall we? So I did, didn't I? But this, yeah, it was great. You know, I mean, what was the inspiration for the story, Richard? Was it one that Stephen King had sort of bounced across you? Or?
Mm-hmm. It was all him. I mean, we were emailing back in early January, which we do a lot. And, you know, we don't usually talk writing that often. We're usually talking sports or family or... you know, movies and books. And this time, I don't remember what it was that made me bring up the topic, but we started talking about collaborations, and then round robin. I've always been interested in those round robin type novels where you have 6 or 8 or 10 different writers contribute chapters. And in the course of that email exchange, he mentioned that he had a story that he had started earlier in the year that he couldn't finish, and I just said, hey, I'd love to read it if you ever feel like sending it. And he sent it the next day, and the email that was attached to it read, do whatever you want with it. So I sat down and I read it, and kind of immediately before I could chicken out, I sent him an email back and said, man, I love this character. I love what you've started. You know, you care if I take a crack at finishing it? And he's like, no, absolutely, go. So I've said this a few times, but it's true. I spent the weekend thinking, what have I done? and was kind of in a state of mild terror because I'm thinking, and I hadn't told anyone, not my family, not the people in my office, no one. Partly because I was terrified, partly because I couldn't believe it, and also because I figured, you know, he's going to come to his senses and write me back and say, you know, Rich, yeah, I was kidding. So yeah, that weekend was many anxious thoughts and mild terror, and then Monday I sat down with a notebook to make some notes longhand, and immediately mild terror gave way to sheer terror. My hands were shaking, and I was like, "What have I done? Oh Jesus!"
Oh, no.
But the cool thing was that I kind of ditched my notes and I just opened my laptop and pulled up the file and started writing. And within a half an hour or so, all the nerves were gone. And, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, I was in Castle Rock and I was just rolling with the story. And I looked up, you know, I think 3 days later and I had 10,000 additional words. And same thing, before I could chicken out, I just hit send and sent them to Steve and said, might be a little rough, but you can see where I'm going. And fortunately, he really liked it and told me, you know, he'd have some time and I think, you know, in a week to get cracking on it. So I took that week to do a little more and sent it to him, and then we just played ping pong back and forth with drafts, I think three different times, and that was it. You know, my ending was originally darker and gave Gwendy a fate that she did not really deserve. So we talked about that, and we both took a shot at the ending and wrote what is in the actual book. But and that was the whole process. It was January 6th to February 6th, and we were finished.
Wow. That is, yeah, that's amazing. That was literally start to finish. That's, yeah, I wish I could write something that lengthy that quick. That's, yeah.
It was, spent most of February kind of looking back and thinking, did that really happen? And every once in a while I'd, like, pull up the file, look at it, and so, yeah, you know, I didn't dream that. So it was just like I said, it was a cool experience from start to finish. And we had, you know, what was interesting is we really didn't talk about what we were going to do with the story until we were finished. We finished it, and he said, I think it's done. I said, I think it's done. And then we kind of looked at each other and said, now what? because we didn't know what length it was going to be. We had no market in mind. And we just decided then that we would kind of model it after Blockade Billy, an earlier Stephen King book that we had published, and kind of publish it as a standalone little hardcover and do some limited editions, but mainly focus on the trade. And the big difference is this time we were the sole publishers and controlled ebook rights and all that. So again, it as cool as it was from a business standpoint for Cemetery Dance and all that, it was infinitely cooler just from a personal standpoint of someone who grew up reading Steve and really admiring his work and being influenced by his work. And then, you know, over the course of the last, 20-something years, I was fortunate enough to publish him and then fortunate enough to become friends with him. And people have asked, did you ever dream this would happen? And I always say, no, you know, I'm a huge dreamer, have been from day one, but I never dreamed this big. I never even in a million years thought, it never entered my mind. I never thought it was possible. So it's all been good.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, obviously, congratulations. I mean, you know, probably every independent horror writer, you know, sort of hates you now.
Yeah.
Certainly.
I think, yeah, I was going to say it's probably split where, you know, I've got a lot of folks who are genuinely happy, and then I kind of think, I go, hey, I haven't heard from so-and-so, and I'm like, that's because they're, you know, they're sticking pins in their Richard Chismar doll at home and flicking the middle finger every time they see a tweet or a post somewhere going, oh, that lucky, no-talent asshole, you know.
Do you care what they think? Nah.
No. I never would have made it 30 years if I gave a damn what anyone thinks, and that's the truth.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. No, he's great. I mean, it is. It's one of those things, I guess, that all writers sort of dream of that happening. You know, but hats off to, pardon the pun, hats off to, you know, it's. It's great, you know. It shows that, you know, things do happen. things can happen, I mean,
Steve will say himself, he never planned it. I think it's, you know, people have said, you guys, it was, you know, it's because of you're such a close friendship. And I say, absolutely. You got to have a, for someone like Stephen King and his position out there in the publishing world to collaborate with someone, whether it's someone who is absolutely established, like a Peter Straub, who's already a legend himself, or some schmuck like me, there's got to be a huge level of trust, and obviously that's where it comes from. But that's where I believe, you know, the publishing relationship comes from too, because he could obviously publish his limited editions and some of these side projects with anyone he wanted. But I think he knows we've been doing this a long time, and we've always been doing it for the right reasons. And that's a love of the genre. And, you know, it's never been chasing a fad or, you know, what's currently in favor or trying to make a quick buck. Cause if we were doing that, we would definitely not be in publishing, but, So, yeah,
I think,
sorry, go on. No, I was just going to say, there's obviously a good trust level there between us and a lot of mutual respect. And that's kind of where it came from. I think, you know, he felt safe seeing where I went with it. And he had just, you know, he had mentioned this in one interview. He just finished reading the novella along December, the title piece to my last collection. So he, and I don't remember what interview it was that he mentioned this, but it's what he said, is he just finished reading that. So he knew that, you know, I could definitely pull off the story, and that style-wise, we would match pretty well.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to say that myself is that I've read collaborations before where, you know, the whole time I'm picking out, okay, I know she wrote that part. Oh, wait, I know, you know what I mean? And I never had that. It was very seamless. It was, you know, I couldn't, you know, that was cool to me, is that it didn't seem like it was two different writers. It flowed really, really well. And I don't see that a whole lot in collaborations. I really don't. So let's see, while we don't have him to mute me real quick, I wanted to take a couple of seconds here. Oh, what about the sound clip for my baseball? Do you have that, James?
Strike one.
I've two words to say to that. Shite!
And what's the other one?
Shite!
Anyway, I'm a huge baseball fan, and when James is here, he tries to, Stacey's going to mute me every time I talk about baseball, but he can't mute me right now because, you know, he's not here. So I'm really, really excited. I'm a Blue Jays fan. I'm not Canadian, but I'm a Blue Jays fan. Yeah, what?
I'm an Orioles fan, so you know I don't like the Blue Jays. Cedar Gassen was the devil to me.
Rivals.
In earlier years. Yeah, no, you got Bautista on your team.
I know, I love Bautista.
No.
Because of Odor? No, we hate Odor. Oh, my God. So, anyway, we have done really horribly this season so far, and we're, you know, on a little winning streak right now. And I think it was Monday night's game. We won 17-2 over the Cincinnati Reds. We killed them. It was the most amazing game ever. I was beside myself.
Wow.
I think I almost gave myself a heart attack. It was so awesome. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And that was one reason that book, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, was so awesome to me. Is, you know, I read it years ago. And I didn't know anything about baseball then. I really didn't. So even, you know, when they were describing the baseball, whatever was happening, I had no clue what was going on. So now that I'm actually a baseball fan, I went back and reread the book, and I'm like, oh, I get it a little more now. So.
Yeah, no, that's neat how he does that. And obviously he's a huge fan. I mean, we quite a few spirited texts will go back and forth regarding the Red Sox and the Orioles. And as a matter of fact, just a few days ago, coinciding with your Blue Jays good fortune, is we lost six in a row, and then we got lucky and beat the Yankees, and last night we got our asses kicked by the Yankees, so we lost seven of our last eight. But yeah, somewhere in there, I texted him and I said, "I guess this makes you happy, huh?" And he wrote back, and it's like, "Why? Yes, it does."
I'm gonna have to remember this now whenever we play the Orioles, and you will be getting a text from me now too.
I would rather lose to almost anyone You know, except the Blue Jays. I guess the only team I would have lose to more is the Yankees.
I love the Blue Jays. And, okay, it's because I'm not Canadian. People always, you know, say something about, you know, why are you a Blue Jays fan? Well, I have a couple different reasons. And number one, I honestly think that they are the best distressed team in the, you know. I know, isn't that a... I do think that. But to be honest, they were the first team that I actually watched a whole game, and I just...
Well, then that makes a big difference.
Yeah, definitely. So I love them, and they're doing better. They won the game last night, and I was really excited about that. And there's a game in, like, a couple of hours, and I'm going to be glued to my radio because they don't show it on my freaking TV. But, yeah, so I have blathered for way too long about baseball, and James is going to, like, holler at me or something now.
Yes, I am. No, I'm back. Am I as AT&T put
good.
The plug back in? Am I good?
Yes, you sound good now. I think I probably because I
sort of slate them every week on the show, they think, oh, we're gonna, just going to muck about with his reception for a little bit.
I know. You're
so, hey, now, and I'm glad I wasn't there for the baseball goings on because I'm an English guy and I've sat through cricket. Don't understand a lot of cricket. In fact, but baseball just confounds me. It goes on too long. I mean, you know, if it's like an hour, I could probably do that. But then again, cricket, you know, you can have cricket matches that go on for like a week. I mean, so...
Oh, jeez.
It's just incomprehensible. It's cricket. I don't know
there was
what goes
a game
on.
In spring training, there was a game with the Blue Jays that went on until like 5 o'clock in the morning.
That's
Isn't
nothing.
That crazy?
See, well, the thing is with cricket, I mean, it's all very genteel because, you know, they'll break for tea and they're going to have tea and scones, you know, and then the light fades a bit and they'll call it and oh, bad light, you know. It's just, you know, we went to one in Headingley, great, great cricket ground near where I used to live, just to go to a cricket game, just to sit and watch a cricket match. And it's just like, what is going on? They're just standing around and every now and then somebody run and throw a ball and somebody run up and down a bit and then they stand around and just, oh, Jesus, just do something, you know. But baseball, sorry, no, just bores me to tears. I'm so sorry.
I'm addicted.
Yes, you are. But anyway, moving on from that because I'm bored. I don't like Richard. we have a reading.
We do.
Oh, silence. Yes, we have a reading. I'm told Richard obviously is you know far too big time to read now. So
I don't like reading my own work. Plus, can't you tell my voice is all? I've spent the last two long nights out in the woods helping my my oldest son film a short movie for his senior project in school. So we've been out in the woods with him and some friends around a campfire, breathing in horrible smoke for like I guess last night we shot from around 6 until midnight or so. And I woke up this morning and I'm just like, oh, my eyes are slits. Everything's, yeah, it's been interesting. But we're making a cool little short film that has a cool little cameo at the end, which can't tell you who it is. And it'll
awesome.
Be neat. We should be wrapped up within a week. And I wrote it with my son Billy, and he's directing it and also acting in it. And I think it'll be a lot of fun.
That sounds
fantastic. But
that's
just an excuse because I really wouldn't want to read anyway. But.
And you have a great voice. You do. I was telling Becky, you know, he's got such a cute voice, and you won't read to us. We're stuck with James.
There you go. So that sort of that. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. I noticed how Eckstein is sort of. Oh, Jim, you're doing the reading, and who made that decision there, Eckstein? I think it was you, wasn't it? Although this is revenge because I made her. I sort of stuck you with it. In fact, on air, said, "Oh, she's going to read this bit." What?
I know.
Yeah,
I had to say the most awful words. Even after I said it, I was like, "Oh my God, did I actually just say that out loud?" It was awful.
I had a glance through it. And I thought, "I'm not reading. That's filth. I'm not reading that." I mean, but it did sound. It sounded a lot better. The female reading it, shall we say? It was.
Now I want to hear it.
We need to dig up the episode and I'll send you it.
Yeah, please do.
It was awful.
Are we ready?
We're ready.
I'm ready.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. That was a bit of a satellite delay there, Xtina. Well done. Mm. You need to get yourself another drink, my dear. Can you
do
that? You need to open. You need to open. Here we go. We need to open another bottle. There you go. There are three ways up to Castle View from the town of Castle Rock, Route 117, Pleasant Road, and the Suicide Stairs. Every day this summer, yes, even on Sundays, 12-year-old Gwendy Peterson has taken the stairs, which are held by strong, if time-rusted, iron bolts and zigzag up the cliffside. She walks the first 100, jogs the second 100, and forces herself to run up the last 105, pelting, as her father would say, hell-bent for election. At the top, she bends over, red-faced, clutching her knees, hair in sweaty clumps against her cheeks. It always escapes her ponytail on that last sprint, no matter how tight she ties it, and puffing like an old cart horse. Yet there has been some improvement. When she straightens up and looks down the length of her body, she can see the tips of her sneakers. She couldn't do that in June, on the last day of school, which also happened to be her last day in Castle Rock Elementary. Her shirt is sweat-pasted to her body, but on the whole, she feels pretty good. In June, she felt ready to die of a heart attack every time she reached the top. Nearby, she can hear the shouts of the kids on the playground. From a bit farther away comes a chink of an aluminium bat hitting a baseball as the senior league kids practice for the Labor Day charity game. She's wiping her glasses on the handkerchief she keeps in her pocket of her shorts for just that purpose when she is addressed. "Hey, girl, come on over here for a bit. We ought to palaver, you and me." Gwendy puts her specs on, and the blurred world comes back into focus. On a bench in the shade, close to the gravel path leading from the stairs into the Castle View Recreational Park, sits a man in black jeans, a black coat like for a suit, and a white shirt unbuttoned at the top. On his head is a small, neat black hat. The time will come when Gwendy has nightmares about that hat. The man has been on this same bench every day this week, always reading the same book, Gravity's Rainbow. It's thick and looks mighty arduous, but has never said anything to her until today. Gwendy regards him warily. "I'm not supposed to talk to strangers." That's good advice. He looks about her father's age, which would make him 38 or so, and not bad looking, but wearing a black suit on a hot August morning makes him a potential weirdo in Gwendy's book. "Probably got it from your mother, right?" "Father," Gwendy says. She'll have to go past him to get to the playground. And if he really is a weirdo, he might try to grab her. But she's not too worried. It's broad daylight, after all. The playground is close and well-populated, and she's got her wind back. "In that case," says the man in the black coat, "let me introduce myself. I'm Richard Farris, and you are..." She debates, then thinks, "What harm?" "Gwendy Peterson." "So there, we know each other." Gwendy shakes her head. Names aren't knowing. He throws back his head and laughs. It's totally charming in its honest good humour, and Gwendy can't help smiling. She still keeps her distance, though. He points a finger gun at her. Pow! "That's a good one." "You're a good one, Gwendy. And while we're at it, what kind of name is that anyway?" "A combination. My father wanted a Gwendolyn. That was his granny's name. And my mum wanted a Wendy, like in Peter Pan. So they compromised. Are you on vacation, Mr. Farris?" This seems likely. They are in Maine, after all. Maine proclaims itself vacation land. It's even on the license plates. "You might say so. I travel here and there. Michigan one week, Florida the next. Then maybe hop to Coney Island for a red hot and a ride on the Cyclone. I am what you might call a rambling man, and America is my beat. I keep an eye on certain people and check back on them every once and again. Chink goes the bat on the field past the playground, and there are cheers. "Well, it's been nice talking to you, Mr. Farris, but I really ought to stay a bit longer. You see, you're one of the people I've been keeping an eye on just recently." This should sound sinister, and does a little, but he's still smiling in the aftermath of his laughter. His eyes are lively, and if he's Chester the Molester, he's keeping it well hidden. Which, she supposes, the best ones would do. "Step into my parlour," said the spider to the fly. "I've got a theory about you, Miss Gwendy Peterson. Formed, as all the best theories are, by close observation. Want to hear it?" "Sure, I guess." "I notice you're a bit on the plump side." Maybe he sees a tighten up at that, because he raises a hand and shakes his head, as if to say, "Not so fast." You might even think of yourself as fat, because girls and women in this country of ours have strange ideas about how they look. The media. Do you know what I mean by the media? Sure, newspapers, TV, Time and Newsweek. Nailed it. So, okay, the media says, girls, women, you can be anything you want to be in this brave new world of equality, as long as you can still see your toes when you stand upright. He has been watching me, Gwendy thinks. Because I do that every day when I get to the top. She blushes. She can't help it, but the blush is a surface thing. Below, it is a kind of so-what defiance. It's what got her going on the stairs in the first place. That and Frankie Stone. My theory is that somebody tweets you about your weight, or how you look, or both, and you decided to take the matter in hand. Am I close? Maybe not a bullseye, but at least somewhere on the target. Perhaps because he's a stranger, she finds herself able to tell him what she hasn't confided to either of her parents. Or maybe it's his blue eyes, which are curious and interested, but with no meanness in them. At least, not that she can see. This kid at school, Frankie Stone, started calling me Goodyear. You know, like the blimp. Yes, I know, the Goodyear blimp. Frankie's a puke. She thinks of telling the man how Frankie goes strutting around the playground, chanting, I'm Frankie Stoner, got a 2-foot boner, and decides not to. Some of the other boys started calling me that, and then a few of the girls picked it up. Not my friends, other girls. That was sixth grade. Middle school starts next month, and, well, you've decided that particular nickname isn't going to follow you there, says Mr. Richard Farris. I see. You'll also grow taller, you know. He eyes her up and down, but not in a way she finds creepy. It's more scientific. I think you might top out around 5'10 or 11 when you're done. Tall for a girl. Started already, Gwendy says. But I'm not going to wait. All pretty much as I thought, Farris said. Don't wait, don't piss and moan, just attack the issue. Go head on. Admirable. Which is why I wanted to make your acquaintance. It's been nice talking to you, Mr. Farris, but I have to go now. No, you need to stay right here. He's not smiling anymore. His face is stern, and the blue eyes seem to have gone grey. The hat lays a thin line of shadow over his brow, like a tattoo. I have something for you. A gift, because you are the one. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to leave. Hopefully I did that justice.
You did wonderfully.
You did.
Thank you. In a Yorkshire accent, and I obviously stumbled over aluminium because you guys, you know, pronounced it wrong.
Aluminium.
no, it's got an I in it, people.
Yeah, and you, the words 2-foot boner sounded great, too. That was Steve, by the way.
Really? Okay. So you're gonna blame him, are you? Well,
absolutely. Absolutely. My youngest kid ran around saying that for quite a while.
Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
But, you know, and it's funny, it takes me back. This true story, when I was of that age, I guess, in fact, probably younger, we had a neighbor kid, and his name was Sean Pilly. And the tune was, you know, I'm Sean, Sean Pilly had a 2-foot willy. There is, in fact, I'll do you the whole thing. Sean Pilly had a 2-foot willy. He showed it to the girl next door. She thought it was a snake, hit it with a rake, and now it's only 1'4". Ba-bum. That poor kid, he's still him, and he will pass that unfortunate name on to his... it's like, you know, some people, you know, if he needs to be a hermit with that name. My very first primary school teacher, her name was Mrs. Rowley, and she was plump. And it's just just be anything except a primary school teacher because we called her roly-poly. I mean, it was just like, pick a different career, lady. Seriously.
That's
so awful. Funny enough, there was an episode of The Simpsons recently where they got a new teacher called Mr. Testicles, who was,
was
depressed because the kids were teasing him, you know. It's just like... So, okay,
yeah.
Kids are horrible. My daughter, she comes home, she tells me some of the kids and stuff. And you have to say, well, just ignore them, sticks and stones and that. And you think, kids are nasty. I mean, kids are just, little kids especially, horrible.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they tell you how it is. They're not politically correct. They don't care about people's feelings. If you're fat, you're fat. You know, I mean, and it's a naive honesty. It's an innocent honesty, you know. I kind of like, you know, I just want to, you know, obviously, tell my daughter it's just name, don't worry about it. Although if somebody lays hands on you, you know, hit me in the face, but, you know, I just want to cuddle her and just you know, embrace this innocent time, you know, where people don't get offended by the slightest stupid thing, you know, and but at the same time, I want to protect, I want to go and beat up all these kids who are calling her names, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hey, now, I've seen pictures of your daughter. I can't imagine what they could say to her. She's adorable.
Maybe so, but she gets, you know, there's kids that, you know, as in every walk of kids that don't like her, you know, and it just happened. It's a great life lesson, because obviously, you know, when you get into the world of work, you know, there are people that you don't get on with. You can't get on with everybody. When I was back in the world of work, I really struggled to get on with anyone. Especially my bosses. I you know, I've been fired from more jobs than most people have actually had jobs, which is...
See, I'm
which is why I'm happy doing what I'm doing now, because it's pretty much just me, so I can get on with myself most of the time, which is great. But anywho, I think my bladder's telling me it's break time. So
I don't know
if you brief Richard that, you know, I'm a martyr to my bladder, and which is why we have a half time break so I can go and have a wee wee. So if you're happy to stick around, Richard, while we have a break.
Yeah, I'll stick around. Happy.
Fantastic. So a bit of a musical interlude. Then we'll be back with Becky the reviewer. So who's going to be reviewing something. So we will be straight back.
She's on my mind all day and a Saturday night. I wanna dance real close. I wanna hold her tight. I want my hands on her. I want her hands on me. So tenderly, and I know you might not, cause it meant that silly. I wanted to be my Mrs. Rockabilly. Mrs. Rockabilly.
Welcome back to part two.
And welcome back to part two of the new Panic Room. And that was Mrs. Rockabilly, obviously, by Carlos Colon and the Jersey Roustabouts. Hopefully they'll come play Houston sometime, because I would... I need to speak to Carlos about that and see if he'll come over, because I would personally, even if you just play for me, I don't mind my front room, I'm happy with that, but it would be great to see them live. Hopefully young Xtina is there.
I'm here, and I do love them. Yeah,
they are great. I think I've got most of their tunes now, and you know, I mean, to anybody who listens to the show regularly, I mean, it is my kind of music, but obviously with a sort of a modern-esque feel, you know, to it. And I love them. I just love them to bits, you know. I've watched them on YouTube. Now, I would love to see them live. That would be great. It'd be a dream come true. Hopefully Richard is still with us. He's not...
I'm here.
He's not run away. How are you, sir? You're back with me. Thank you, my blood. Thanks, everyone.
I'm enjoying it.
Okay. Instead of me blathering, I think we need Becky the reviewer on now. So here we go.
Oh, hey, looks like it's time to review something. Oh no!
Are you there, Becky?
Yes, sir.
You love your jingle, Becky. Say hi to Richard. Richard, say hi to Becky.
Hi, Richard.
Hey, Becky. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good.
Becky, you have some. Hopefully, you have something to review. Otherwise, it's going to be a very quiet 5 minutes. But what are you reviewing for us this evening?
A Long December, written by Richard Chismar.
What a coincidence!
I know.
How did that happen? What an absolute coincidence! Off you go.
Okay, so I've read probably everything that Richard's ever written that I can find, and I love his writing. But this book just is the perfect book. I love collections, I love anthologies, but, you know, it's funny to me because I hear people say, well, I'll just read a story or two and then I'll put it down for a while. No, you won't. Not in this one. Mm-mm. There's 36 stories in this, and I started reading this one night, and at about 7 o'clock the next morning,
okay.
I realized that I wasn't quite finished, but that I had better get ready for the day. So, is it addicting? Yes. Is it a page turner? Oh, yes. Do you want to read it? Hell yes. My favorite story in here is probably After the Bombs. It's a really, really, really good story. My other one is The Lake is Life. Both.
That's nice that those are two recent stories. That's nice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's cool. Always interesting when a review... you know, has wonderful things to say, and they you know, highlight all your old stories, and you sit there and you're grateful for the wonderful review, and you're thinking, oh, everything I'm writing now is shit. I should have stopped 20 years ago.
No, thank you. Stop. You're welcome. This is a big, beautiful book, and the cover is amazing. It's probably easiest, one of the prettiest covers I've ever seen. And, of course, there are two different covers. One for the U.S. and one for the U.K. And like normal, I have to admit, I like the U.K. one just a little bit better, but not a whole lot. But I have both of them. anyway.
Both painted by British artists, by the way.
All right, yeah. Good to hear. That's good.
Yeah.
I know that when I was done reading some of these stories, I was like stunned when they were over. I was like, you know, they're so real. They're so engrossing, and you're like, this could happen to my next door neighbor, or this could be happening in my home, you know? And I really like that. And I like the style that, you know, you write in, and it's just,
thank you.
It's just on my level. It works in my head. I can see what's happening, and that's so very important to me when I read.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I just as you saw, I don't specialize in, you know, exotic locales or anything like that. I kind of just rate in the world that I'm in, and I see plenty of darkness and sadness and triumph and all that, just, you know, right here. Stephen King gave me a great compliment where he said I have the suburban thriller kind of down, and well, I think that's very kind on his part, but that's, yeah, I tend to write about the stuff that happens right next door, and that could be happening in your house, and you're just not telling anyone about, so.
Exactly, and that makes it creepier for me, you know, because I'm like,
me too.
Now I'm looking at my neighbors going, what the hell are y'all doing over there?
Yeah.
Why are you running from the house to the car?
Yeah, I know my monsters are the guy next door.
I picked up on that as well, that it's very, you know, small towns with dark secrets, people with dark secrets, you know, it wasn't, although I have to say, again, apologies if it's one of your early ones, Richard, Ditch Treasures was my favorite.
That was brand new, right before, brilliant, it just had
that nice little... Again, not really super, but that nice little twist to it that was like, just out of all, I mean, I loved all of them, but that one just stuck with me. Maybe I want something, you know, I used to, the whole concept of ditch treasure, I mean, you know, we used to go hunting for that when we were kids, you know, the stuff you find. I think,
yeah.
Like a shoe, you know, who the hell is walking around just one shoe or whatever, bits of all sorts of stuff. But yeah. Yeah, that's why I can see the synergy with, obviously, with you and King with Gwendy's, is that you write, you know, small town America. I would say, you know, as well as he does, you know, I mean, you just,
oh yeah,
he was there, you know.
Well, and I think that's obviously one of the things that attracted me to Steve's work right from the time I was a teenager, is just with what Becky just said. You know, he was writing about people that I knew, or he was writing about people that I saw at the grocery store, that I saw when I left school. You know, he wasn't writing about, you know, vampires and castles over in Europe and all of that. He was just writing about people who I was around every day, and it absolutely made it more terrifying for me.
Yeah.
You know, learning what
Definitely
happened to these people, and
I don't want to know what my neighbors are doing, so that is very terrifying.
It's probably, I think if you did know, they would probably have to kill you and maybe even eat you, Xtina, so be careful. Don't
That's
ask too many questions.
Oh, Lord.
Don't ask too many questions. So, you know, I have to ask Richard, I mean, you know, obviously Stephen King. I mean, who else influences you in your writing?
I think, you know, Rick McCammon, as far as people in the genre, Rick McCammon is just such he's a lush storyteller, and I'm not very lush. I'm pretty plain spoken, which is just how I work. So I look at someone like McCammon, as lush as he is, and just, he can be very extravagant without being wordy, if that makes any sense. He's just such a natural storyteller. So he's one. I think Jack Ketchum, Dallas's work, again, he's the opposite of lush. He's very, very lean and mean. And although I can be pretty nasty myself, I don't tend to get as mean as Ketchum's work. But I just, his work is so simplistic on the surface, but it's got so many levels beneath, and I like that. And then as far as out of the genre, just a lot of the earlier crime writers, you know, John D. McDonald, a lot of those guys, I obviously have been influenced by them as far as the brevity and trying to tell a story with as few words as possible, that kind of thing. But I read everything. You know, I read a lot of history. I read a lot of nonfiction. And, you know, I'm one of those guys who, you know, if I'm having cereal, I'm reading the back of the cereal box, so...
I know. Shampoo. If you're in the bathroom, you're reading the shampoo bottle. That's me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People are blowing their horns at red lights because I'm reading something. You know, I'm like, well, what is this? And I start reading it, and I forget where I am. So.
Yeah.
I'm glad that's not just me then. Although my days of reading the shampoo bottle are over, because obviously, unless I wear my glasses in the shower, and then obviously can't see anything anyway. So, but it's funny. You know, I grew up, I don't know why, maybe because we didn't have PlayStation in those days or electronics. I used to be glued to the back of the cornflakes packet. You know, that one of the most exciting things of the week was the new cornflakes packet. If you had a new offer on, it's like, this is the best thing ever. But then again, you know, we only had two channels on the TV back in those days. So.
That's true.
Yeah, you know, God, I'm sounding old now. You know, so it's funny. I was joking around the kids. You know, Daddy's that old. You know, I used to have a pet dinosaur. They believed me, which is so depressing. Oh, what was it called, Daddy? What was it? Oh, just go to your room.
Did you actually put it on a leash?
Nasty. It was actually a book we got, I think my wife bought me many, many years ago, called How to Keep Dinosaurs and Pets. And it's very well done. They're actually, you know, proper photographs. They've obviously photoshopped them. And about each different species of dinosaur, what's best to have around the house and what's a good guard dinosaur.
Oh,
and it just looks... kids. I mean, I know my son's read that, and I think that's probably partly why... You know, he kind of believed that I had a pet dinosaur. He's got the instruction book. He did have velociraptors as a kid, you know. But I'm really not that old. I promise you. Feel it some days, but
you and me both.
So, so I think it's time to say bye-bye to Becky. Are you going now, Becky?
Oh, yes, I'm going.
Thank you for the kind words, Becky.
You can stick around anytime.
Oh, I will. Feel free to send me anything you want me to read and review, Rich.
I will. Thank you. I got some stuff coming up.
Awesome. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Becky. We will speak to you next week.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Becky.
Bye. Right. She's gone. We can talk about her now. She's gone. So, Christina, what's happening next, my dear?
11 questions. Are you ready for 11 questions, Richard?
Oh God, I hope I am.
Oh, okay, right. Let's have the jingle first, shall we?
And now, 11 questions.
Hey, number one, what's your guilty pleasure?
Oh wow, I'm gonna have to admit this. Lifetime Movie Network movies.
Oh, that's cute.
Awesome.
Yeah, I take a lot of heat in this house for that. And it's a fairly new guilty pleasure. I mean, I've always been aware of it, and I've watched the occasional one. But lately, I think it's because there's, like, so much going on in my world, and there's a lot of chaos that just, you know, click into that channel and letting these pretty traditional, pretty hokey, but to me, endlessly entertaining movies play in the background. That's been my thing for the last month. I have watched dozens of movies with the word stalker and nightmare and killer in the title. But I enjoy them all.
Excellent.
That's a great answer. Yeah.
And it's an honest one.
Baked beans. Ranch style or pork and beans?
Oh, boy. Neither in a long time, but I would probably say pork and beans just because I have great memories of cooking those over campfires as a youngster.
Do you even know what ranch style? I ask everybody this because
you
ask
this every week. I'm going to have to. I have a tin in my pantry. I'm going to send it to you.
Yeah,
I don't know what makes it. It just says ranch style on the tin, and that's...
I know, and no, I don't. I just figured if I don't know what it is, I probably don't like it.
Right, there you go.
Good answer.
Okay, puppies or kittens?
Puppies. I have three dogs here, Boo, Zoe, and Cujo, so I'm definitely a dog guy.
Cujo, nice.
Yeah, Cujo is white and fluffy and weighs 8 pounds, by the way.
Aww.
Awesome. Aww.
Yeah.
Are you sure that's a dog and not just a large hamster?
Yeah, it's a squirrel that we've brought into our home.
What's your favorite lunch meat?
Lunch meat? Oh, man. I really like Italian cold cut, so I guess I could cheat and say everything that's on Italian cold cut, but I like the spicy stuff, so like spicy ham or like spicy pepperoni or something like that.
Good answer. I think so. Yeah. It'll pass. Yeah. You know,
we'll allow that. Christina will allow that. Yeah. She's not going to judge. She usually judges people on the lunch meat question.
Yeah,
I think you've got away with it.
She'll say something later, like, I liked them until the smucky lunch meat answered. You
know? Yeah, what's wrong with thin-sliced turkey?
Kind of freak is it, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What was your first car?
My first car was a hand-me-down dog crap colored, sorry for the description, brown little Toyota that I rode into the ground. And then I got an MG, and obviously I know nothing about cars, so that lasted like 6 months. But yeah, the first one was a little brown Toyota.
I'm just excited that I could actually finally remember what mine was, except for just the color. So,
yeah, it took you six months to remember, though, actually. You know,
I know, so
months.
You get a thumbs up for knowing.
No, I'm not a truck guy. I go into hotels, and they ask for the make and the year and the license plate, and I'm like, I just like stare into space, and I'm like, and they're like, you don't know what kind of truck you have, and I'm like, no. It's big, and it's black, and...
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you the secret there, Richard, and I it happens to me, is you park it where you can see it from a window. You just point out the window, is that one.
Yeah,
that's mine.
That
just gets through everything.
Yeah. I think I'm trying to be elusive, and I'm like, I'm just dumb.
What do you fear most, snakes or spiders?
Oh, snakes. Snakes. I saw a lot of big spiders the last two nights on this night shoot, which were creepy. But, yeah, if I see a snake, I'm gone. I'm not scared of many things, but snakes are just, yeah, no, I'm not friends with snakes.
Wrong answer again. Jeez, you're not
joking.
Yeah, I'm never being invited back. My least favorite baseball team, the Yankees, followed by the Blue Jays.
Oh,
I'm going right for the heart.
Okay, Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
Oh, you know what? I'm going to pick Jason just because I like that whole, I like the whole locale of the summer camp and all that, even though he's been in space and in New York and everywhere else. I really like the fact
that. Yeah, that's just weird.
yeah, I don't like those episodes, but yeah, Jason.
You know, no one ever picks Pinhead. Do you realize that, James? No, I don't think anyone ever
picked
Pinhead.
I have noticed that, and no, to be fair, I did. I was the one who picked Pinhead. That was it. Just me.
See, I think my question would have been like Freddy, Jason, or Michael. Michael would have been a good one. I would have picked Michael.
Yeah, but you didn't write the questions, did you?
I didn't.
No. So just carry on.
Okay.
Shut up. Good job.
First draft, handwritten or word processor?
Both. Usually word processor, but literally just wherever inspiration strikes me. I have written that short story, Heroes, that was in Long December. I wrote that in longhand, sitting in a parking lot.
Wow.
I know I wrote part of Ditch Treasures, very small segment, but maybe 500 words on scrap paper when I was sitting waiting for someone. But it's usually in my laptop.
Yeah. Favorite alcoholic drink?
In younger days, it would have been something like tequila. Now it's just probably beer. Yeah. Pretty basic.
I'll drink
that. An American guy.
Hey, you would, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Okay, number 11. One interesting non-writing related fact about you.
One interesting non-related fact about me. Got to say something that'll make me sound good, because the other stuff, I could be like, again, I won't be invited back. I guess I was a high school, I was a college lacrosse player. I was an All-American in lacrosse in college. People are always surprised to find out that, you know, an old salty editor was an athlete, but yeah, that's something.
I like that answer. And here's our bonus question, and I think I know the answer. Baseball or stamp collection?
Oh, baseball.
Woo-hoo!
Oh, do you know, I thought you were going to say stamp collecting. I got you all wrong.
You know
there.
What? I did collect stamps when I was little, and I collected coins and baseball cards and a lot of cool stuff like that, but yeah, base, definitely baseball.
Woohoo, James, in your face.
Woo! Well, Stamp Collection's had about three votes, I think, so far. So I think I'm losing that one tragically, which is terrible. We're going to do that. We're going to get my stamp collection out one evening on the air, and we're going to go through it for an hour and a half. We're just going to go through Jim's stamps.
I want to call in that day.
Yeah,
I'm going to be.
There you go. Get Richard booked in on that day. Yeah, Xenia.
How exciting!
Just for the two of us, then. I think the listener would probably tune out. But there you go. There you go. Back in.
And now I'm actually anxious to hear because we only have one guest on today. He has to do both of our cute little segments there. So he has an embarrassing story that he'd like to share with us. I'm hoping anyway.
Oh right, okay. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll do the intro for that as well. I'm getting to press all the buttons today.
Hi, I'm Patty, and I'm Thelma. What is your most embarrassing story?
You guys ready?
Yes,
sir. Go for it.
I don't know if this is my most embarrassing, but it's pretty damn embarrassing, especially in light of Gwendy and working with Steve and all that. I've in my more personal life, I've probably had many more embarrassing, but this one's pretty good. A few years back, I think it was Under the Dome, when Steve was touring for Under the Dome, he came to a Walmart not far, probably half an hour from where I am in Maryland. And I remember we were emailing the night before. He said, "Are you going to be there?" I said, "Yeah, absolutely." I was feeling kind of sick, but I remember thinking, "Yeah, you know, I got to get out there and see him. I haven't seen him in a while." The day of the signing, my sister, who lives in Lake Tahoe, came in, and my family, we all went out to dinner. And, you know, she knew I had to leave early to go to the signing. She begged me to take her with her. I'm like, "Yeah, you know." I said, "But I'm feeling kind of exhausted. I'm not feeling great. We'll see by the time it's over." And I ended up, long story short, I ended up passing. I ended up just not going. I felt terrible and was exhausted, so I didn't go. The next morning, I wake up, and I didn't think much about it. I did email Steve that night before I went to bed, and I heard back from him the next morning, along with a whole bunch of other people that said, "Dude, where were you last night?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" And somebody says, "Check this video out." And it was something that someone had posted from the signing on YouTube. So I guess Steve, in the midst of his talk, interrupted himself mid-sentence, and he said, "Hey, my friend Rich Chismar's here somewhere. Rich, where are you?" And he walks away from the podium, and he's standing on his tippy toes, and he's looking into the audience, and, "Rich." And the lady right in the front row says, "I'll be Rich Chismar for you." And he laughs and makes a joke. And so there is about 20 seconds of immensely uncomfortable video of Steve, you know, peering into the audience, calling for me, and then I guess realizing that I didn't show. And, it's horrible, you know. I'm not someone who likes attention, so I may have tried to throw my voice in the audience anyway and been like, "Over here," and just, you know, shrunk down and hid because I really don't like attention. But I was mortified, to say the least, and the emails kept coming in, you know, "Check this video out. Hey, Rich, hey, loser," you know. So, yeah, I put that down as an embarrassing story of the evening. I skipped out on Steve, and I felt horrible for it, and he took it in good humor and all that. And my sister to this day blames me. She's like, "Oh, my God, maybe we would have been invited to the stage." And I'm like, "Oh, thank God I wasn't." But, yeah, that's an embarrassing story and something of that. Now that I've told it again for the first time in a while, I'm cringing again.
You know, brilliant. What? I'm just glad it didn't have anything to do with poo, because normally our stories, there's mention of poo in them, and this is a good one that doesn't. So.
Yeah, I'm the non-poo related embarrassing story.
Yay!
Well, that is why we never discuss mine, you know, because all of mine, I think pretty much everyone has poo related somewhere. Up until that particular moment when Xtina mentioned it, we have been a poo free show, which is a bit of a thing for us, really. So
you
well
almost
well done
made
for
it. Yeah. No, I have some good poop stories, but they involve my friends. So I for another day. Yeah.
Maybe we should just have a whole show sometime, just poo stories, and just have you know, get it out of our system. Pardon the pun. Get it out of our system, I guess. But
you will break audience records if you. Yeah, yeah. My mom used to always say, "What, we have to talk about this at the dinner table?" And I'm like, "It's
right.
Everybody talks about it."
Well, it's funny. Yesterday, literally 2 days ago, sat down to dinner with the kids. My daughter, my little sweet little 8-year-old daughter, decided then would be a great time to tell me that our greyhound has a squirty bottom. I think it's something. And she goes, "Oh, just shut up." Yeah, but I think because he had some leftover Chinese food the night before, and I think it's upset his stomach. Can we not? I'm trying to eat my spaghetti bolognese, and we're having a family dinner. Please, let's not talk about the dog's rear end. Thank you. Oh,
that's so gross.
Bless her. Bless her. I mean, how many kids do you have, Richard? You mentioned the one.
Two sons.
Awesome. Awesome. Are they past that wonderfully sweet age?
They're past the pooing on themselves stage, but not past the being fascinated with poo at all stage. I mean, there's many poo jokes in the woods last night, and farting and poo and all bodily functions are daily conversation.
I think as guys, I don't think we ever grow past that. I certainly haven't.
No.
I'm still infinitely fascinated and amused by all manner of bodily functions. I love
I
all
always,
that.
Yeah, I'm like, he's if he's the kind of guy who, you know, wouldn't laugh at somebody who farted in public, I'm like, I can't be friends with him.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, because I'm immature, and, you know, if you're standing next to me in the bookstore and you rip one, I'm going to scurry away laughing, and I can't help it.
I think, anybody who doesn't, I think, you know, can assume that they are dead inside.
Yes.
To be honest,
absolutely. You can go.
That may be. Hey, there may be a novella in that. You know, one way of you know, finding out who the vampires are. You just go and stand next to them in a bookstore and fart, and if they don't laugh, put a stake through the heart. There you go. You know.
There you go. Oh my.
Well, it kind of reminded me of "And Then You Die," James.
I forgot all about that. Yeah, that was literally about.
How do you forget about that?
Because I wrote it so long ago. I actually started off as a short story that is a novella now. About a lady who soils herself in a car and it comes to life. And that is the story.
Right. And the cover is great. Well,
it'd be a great graphic novel.
It would be a perfect graphic novel, yeah. No, actually, the guys at JL International picked the cover out. It's funny, you look at the cover, and obviously the lady is covered in chocolate, but then when you know what the book's about, the picture takes on a whole different meaning. It was written as a bizarro novella. For a specific publisher who in the end thought it was too poop oriented for them, which was funny. What were you expecting, really?
You didn't see that in the guidelines?
Exactly, yeah. And I said it's actually about poo that comes to life, and they didn't, you know, thought it was, yeah, anyway, but JL International took it on, bless them, and it's pretty tongue-in-cheek. I actually have I give the poop a voice, and it's the voice of Russell Brand. I'm specifically not a Russell Brand fan. Russell Brand spoiled Katy Perry for me, I have to say. I love Katy Perry. She's a hot babe, even with a new haircut. But I can't, you know, my daughter plays the music a lot and what have you, but I can't look at her now that, well, Russell Brand's had a go on that, and he just kind of spoils it for me, so.
That's understandable.
Anyway, we need to move away from poop now. Now,
right,
Xena lowered
right,
the tone.
Yeah.
Can you see that? We were doing really well, and then you just had to mention it, didn't you? And look at where we are.
It's my fault. You know, normally
just look at where
we
plunged.
So,
Richard. Yeah, Richard, you need to drink more. Richard, so what is next for you, sir?
Oh, I have. Let's see, what is next for me? I'm working on a few things right now. I have a couple stories I have to finish for deadlines. I have a novella that I'm writing for Subterranean Press for next year. I have another novella that I'm writing, excuse me, which will be the title novella to the next collection for P. Crowther and P.S. Publishing. And then I'm working on my first full-length novel, finally, so that will be interesting. And now I'm suddenly inclined to include as much poo as possible because I can't get it off my head.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We've destroyed your career. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, if you do the poo, I need a dedication in there. This is to Xtina. Thank you for all the poo or something like that.
Yeah, the goddess of poo. Oh God.
I'm sure that's probably not an epithet that she needs or wants, but it's a good one. It's a good thing. I like it.
Yeah, it'll take a while to lose that if you.
Yeah. Oh yes.
So I'm working on a lot of different things, and I mean, right now I spend so much time, you know, helping to promote the book and working on the publishing side. But once things die down a little bit, I can devote a little bit more time to. You know, I'm still getting the work done, but it's, like I said, it's been kind of chaotic, and I'm looking forward to just getting back to a normal writing schedule every day.
Mm-hmm. So how come, you know, after all this time, you're going novel length now? Is that just the story dictates that, or something you wanted to push for?
A little bit of the story definitely dictates it, and I've wanted to for years. I've just, you know, I'm the first person to say, I always say it. You know, yes, I've been, you know, helping to raise two boys, and yes, I did about a 6 or 7 year stint there where I wrote, you know, a lot of movies, and always, you know, the majority of my time is focused on the publishing company from a business standpoint. But they're all just excuses, you know. If you want to write, you write, and I've written a lot of short stories in the midst of all that, but it's just time to write a book. And obviously with Gwendy, there's a lot of interest, and, you know, a lot of different people want a book. So I figure I'll try to write one good enough that, you know, they'll put it out there in a decent number of copies and see what happens.
Awesome.
Well,
so when will that be hitting the shelves? Do you have
I haven't sold it yet, you know. I've got quite a few publishers who have asked, and I'm going to go ahead and... I don't think I'll take it out to market until I've, you know, hit about 150 pages, something like that, and then give them an outline for the rest. My guess is if all goes well, you know, maybe sell it by the end of this year, and if it's a big New York publisher, you know, then have to wait two more freaking years for it to be published. But I have a lot of stuff in the meantime, and I'll try to hang on to limited rights so someone could do a limited and have that come out earlier, that sort of thing. But it'll be a while.
Yeah, it's a business that, I mean, I've had to learn a lot of patience because, like you say, you've written it and you expect, right, I've written it, it's edited, you know, it should be on the shelves tomorrow.
Right.
And then two years later, and it's like, oh, where's my book then?
Right, and even a small company like us, you know, we're notorious for taking a while to get certain books out, and sometimes it's the writer, and you know, everything's finished, it's edited, it's laid out, and you know, it's just the fact that we let the writer be in control of cover art on this project, and they've gone through their third cover, and that's not, you know, or they're waiting to sign the signature sheets, and it's that, you know, and customers are lined up saying, hey, where's this title, and we're just not the kind to throw, you know, people under the bus, and then plenty of other times it's our fault. You know, we're focusing on 12 other projects, and that's number 13 on the list, and it just has to wait because there's only, you know, so many hours in the day. So it all takes a while, no matter the size. And, you know, Gwendy is the exception, and I've had a couple people say, how did you do that so quickly? And that's what I said. Well, we knew Steve and Owen had a big book coming out in October. We knew that his... you know, main publisher Scribner in New York would not want us stepping on their toes and publishing close to them, and nor would we want to do that. They've been great in allowing us to kind of coexist. So we rushed it through production as quickly as we could and got it out as early as we could so it would not interfere with Sleeping Beauties, their book, in October. And that was definitely the exception and not the rule. But, yeah, I think from the day he sent me the file to the day we actually published the book was only maybe 4 months. So,
wow.
Yeah,
wow.
That doesn't happen.
That has to be a record,
And it helped that it was a novella. If it was a full-length novel, we're that's not possible.
Yeah. Right. I think even for that, I mean, like I said, start to finish 4 months is, I guess, I would say probably unheard of, certainly in mainstream publishing. That's, yeah, well done.
If only everything
was that
sure.
fast. Yeah.
Yeah, I wish.
Everything, yeah. It is, as I say, I mean, I'm not known certainly for my patience, but I've learned a hell of a lot over the past 4 or 5 years.
That, yeah.
Excuse me? What? Do you know you're just having a dig at me all the time? What? It's just being unpleasant for the sake of it. You nasty person.
No, I wanted to say that I can't wait to start reading your short story collection because now I've heard from James and from Becky how great it is. And
thank you.
I've never really been one for short stories because they've always been too short. But I did just get that.
Really, you said that?
Yeah. Well, you know, really. But I'm like, because I was always the kind of person who went to the store and wanted to pick out the thickest book I could find. You know, mm-hmm. to drag it out more. But
So what Xtina wants is a short story that's 250,000 words long. There you go.
Exactly.
So sorted.
Yeah.
Then she's happy. Well, I tell you what.
That's another
reason
for the novel is just that there are a lot of readers who don't prefer short stories and they would rather read, you know, novel length fiction. So, you know, it's just an effort to branch out some.
Well,
yeah,
now that I've actually
gotten
a little older and I don't have as much time to sit down and read, short stories are actually a little bit better for me now. Just because I can pick it up and put it down. But then again, even with that, sometimes I get so engrossed in something that it's hard to put it down. So that's a good thing when it's a little shorter.
I get the problem where you know, I'll finish one. I'll just one more. And then, another hour's gone by.
I'm just going to start the paragraph. I'm just going to see what, and then, you know, next thing you know, you're finishing that one and you're going on to the next one. Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah. What I was going to say is what we need to do now as a follow up to this show, we need to get Stephen King on so we can quiz him as to what it was like to write with the Richard Chismar. So if you can organize that, we've got to get the guy on, you know, because I think the listener would love to know that.
Yeah, no, I'll try. You would get some interesting banter, I'm sure.
We will get him on. But it's been an absolute pleasure, Richard. So
thank you. The time went by way too fast. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and ask you if you will promise to come back. And I say it that way because now you can't really refuse. You have to agree to come back.
No, I had fun. I'd come back anytime.
So did we, yeah. Well, see, it's actually recorded now. We have you recorded saying that. So she will stalk you. She really will. She will.
We'll talk about two earlier in the segment next time.
Oh, dear Lord, no.
I'll come back as long as it's poo, baseball, and stamp collecting.
Oh, well,
perfect. That's my. Do you know that is my that would be my ideal show. We could even get Becky to review one of the Winnie the Pooh books. That'd be great. That'd be great. Oh, just to really go with it, just keep the theme going. You know, be.
I'm in.
Excellent. Well, we will see you there. Thank you so much, Richard. Thank you for giving up your time for having a bit of fun with us. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure.
I
appreciate
so
it, guys. Thank you. All right, take care.
Okay. Bye. Bye-bye.
Everyone is looking at me, laughing at the clothes I wear. I have my thick black leather jacket and my helmet, greasy hair. And my shopper's got to say, "Who's that guy trying to be?"